Okay, so before we start, what I have here and I will distribute around is, as it's clearly written here, not a questionnaire, but a draft questionnaire. What it means is simply we want you not to start filling it out, just to have a look at your leisure and perhaps suggest in the last page what other questions should we be asking so that tomorrow we will tabulate all these and give you the real questionnaire, okay? So the only thing I want you to keep in mind is that, of course, although a 50-question questionnaire answered by someone provides more information than a 25-question questionnaire, a long questionnaire that somebody says, "I'm not bothering," and throws it away will bring less information than one that actually people fill. So keep that in mind. We try to cover what was a sort of agreement that everybody wanted to know, but feel free. So I'll pass it around in a few rows, and after lunch, I'll try to collect them and see what suggestions you have.
Is anyone else supposed to be moderator for this second half? Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, so the second session is listed here as hiring and retention of theorists at PUI. And I'm not sure now, is PUI, is that private undergraduate institution or primarily undergraduate institution? Because if it's the former, then I don't want to recognize any of the people who are sitting in that group right there. You won't be able to talk in this session. But if it's the latter, then everybody, I guess, is free to contribute. And our kickoff speaker, our single speaker, is Gary Bowman. Gary.
Thanks, John. I guess the first thing I'd like to say here is to thank the organizers. I think these things are a lot more work than we realize, and I'd just like to say thanks for putting this thing together. I think it was well worth doing. The only reason I suppose I'm the one up here right now is because I made the mistake of suggesting this session. So I said, okay, fine, you want to suggest it? I just want to take a few minutes, really. I have a couple of very simple transparencies I want to put up here. I thought I'd start with an anecdote. A few years ago, I was talking to the chair of a department that had a job advertisement out there, and it was phrased as a lot of them are. If you look at the IIP website, it said something to the effect of experimentalist preferred. And so I talked to the guy, and I said, well, does that mean you'll consider a theorist? And he said, well, these days everybody wants experimentalists, but we can't always get them. So we might consider a theorist. Which left me feeling kind of cheap and used, you know. The best I could do. So the fact is, if you do look at the AIP website, presumably you're familiar with what I'm talking about, but they have actually quite a nice site with job ads on it. You'll find that a great many undergraduate institutions prefer experimentalists or just flat won't consider a theorist. Every once in a while you'll see an ad where they'll consider theorists, but it's definitely the minority. So that's really kind of what prompted me to suggest this session. Presumably we all here have jobs, but you never know, you might want to move around at some point. There's other people coming up who want jobs. And I think it's a broader issue of why do we have such little acceptance at the sorts of institutions we're at in terms of hiring more like our own sorts. So anyway, I just want to have, like I say, two very simple transparencies, but I thought it'd be worthwhile actually putting some of this down in black and white. So my acronym is UGI for undergraduate institutions. And I came up with three questions, and there's no warranty made here. I don't claim that these are particularly the right things to ask, but it's something to start with. Is the predisposition of undergraduate institutions towards experimentalists well justified? I think that's a legitimate question to ask. Insofar as, look, if we're honest about it, maybe you will come away saying, yeah, it is justified, and maybe they really shouldn't be hiring more theorists. I don't know, but I think it's a question worth asking. The second one is, what are the assets and liabilities of theorists at UGIs? And I have a second transparency that deals with that a little bit. That's the only question of the three that I'll deal with in a little more detail. And the third one is, how can we take our case of the smudges are the result of being left-handed and using wet erase markers? Unavoidable casualty, I guess, is the transparency. How can we take our case, if we have one, and that's to be debated, I suppose, how can we take our case to the community of UGIs, undergraduate institutions? I don't know the answers to these questions, of course. And then the second transparency is really just to elaborate a bit more on the second question of the first one, that is assets and liabilities. And again, this is strictly my own, you know, extremely unscientific approach here. It's just things that I've observed, and you're completely free to disagree with me. So let me take maybe 5 minutes and talk about this, and then I'll sink into my corner over here. There's three things that I can identify, and this little graph here, so to speak, on the left, my perception is, again, strictly my own feeling about which the order of importance of these things at schools, and it may not be the same at all schools, or may not be like that anywhere. First of all, there's a question of money, and it seems to me there's really two issues here, startup funding and external funding. And you can look at this as a good news, bad news story, or as a bad news story. To me, the good news, bad news, you know, the glass is half full way of looking at this is to say our startup money is generally, as a rule, lower than an experimentalist we would expect. And so you would think that would be a good thing. And external funding, of course, that's the bad news part of it, is that it's also correspondingly lower. And institutions, as a rule, like money. To me, the way this could turn into a bad news thing is, I think it's true, and disagree with me if you do, but I think it's true that perhaps the administration may feel that small startup is a good thing. But I'm not sure that's true of the department. I think a lot of times the department, in fact, would like a new hire to go, say, get the maximum they can, milk it out of the dean. And so there might be a little tension here. And it seems to me ultimately the first line that you got to get through if you're going to get hired somewhere or be retained is the department, not the administration. The department doesn't want you, you're dead before you start. So I'm not sure what to make of that. At any rate, I don't think it's a terribly important issue, at least that's my perception, but it is potentially an issue. The second one I've written down is local collaborations, and I very intentionally use the word local. How important are they? I think when you see ads for, say, the AIP website, when you see ads for whatever it be, theorists, experimentalists, whatever, generally they'll say, we want somebody doing, you know, this, that, and the other type of physics. And you can infer that that's because they want to establish a collaboration within the department. And so I know that's been true at our department, that we've phrased our ads very specifically just for that reason. And so the question here is, how important are local collaborations? I mean, specifically collaborations within the department. And again, I'll give you one more little anecdote. I've been at NAU for 9 years, and we have about 14 faculty, which is rather large, actually, for our type of department we have. But there's been a lot of turnover. So I've actually been there through the process of hiring 13 people, not including myself. So I've seen a lot of people get hired, and I've seen the process at work many times. And almost in every case, of those 13, 9 of them were permanent people, tenure-track people, and 4 of them were visiting. In almost every case, there was at least some hope that these people would be collaborating with people in the department. I don't know of one success. There isn't one successful collaboration that has arisen out of those hires. There is not one. In fact, there is not one successful collaboration in our department, period, within the department. That's not to say we don't have successful collaborations, but we don't have successful local collaborations within the department. And the reason, to me, that seems significant is because if theorists are being taken out of the loop, so to speak, because we're perceived as not being able to collaborate as well within departments, is that a red herring? Is that really the case? And could we make a case to undergraduate institutions that, in fact, look, you shouldn't really hold this against us so much? I don't know. I mean, other people at other schools may have totally different experiences, but that's my experience at NAU. So to me, you can't really have a shotgun collaboration. You can't, you know, hold a gun to somebody's head and say, by God, collaborate or else, right? I mean, it works or it doesn't, and you don't really know till after the person's there. Anyway, so I think that's a reasonably important thing that schools are looking for, I think more so than the money aspect. And finally, undergrad research, which we have beaten almost to death here, and deserves it, probably, but we've talked about it a great deal. And so I won't really talk about, I don't know the answers to these things. But certainly that's a very important thing, and I would consider it paramount probably in the minds of most institutions. We're hiring people.
Are you saying that the theorists that are particularly good at undergraduate research as compared to experimentalists, why are you mentioning undergraduate research via that?
What I'm saying is these are what I view that University of Southeast Podunk is looking for a physicist, and what might they view as the balance sheet, the assets and liabilities for a theorist in general, and these are kind of, this is my short list of what people might view. Yes, sir?
Of course, theorists can teach X courses, experimentalists can officially teach more courses.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think
I've got a smaller school. I cannot teach the junior lab. In principle, any course.
The fact is, we've hired, this is maybe a little off the beaten track, but we've hired a couple of astronomers recently, and they really can't teach. I mean, some astronomers can teach a great deal, but some of them really can't teach much. Some of them really can't even teach 300 level physics, so maybe that's a good point.
I'll hit a few of these. I have the really weird perspective of being hired on a 1-year visiting position that they then had to advertise nationally for a 3-year visiting position, so I actually like saw everybody that I was competing for the second time around. And so on the money startup issue, where it came in to play a role is when the final two candidates for the position, me and an experimentalist, were being bandied back and forth. And one of the issues was she needed liquid helium. And well, it wasn't even a startup issue, it was long-term funding. That's expensive. I'm cheap. And that played a role in the decision. But it didn't come down to it until the field was narrowed down. And then they started thinking about the practical issues of that and also which one of us was more likely to accept. And so that plays a small role.
It seems to me, just from looking at the ads, that I think a lot of the problem, if you're out there looking for a job right now, it seems to me a lot of the problem is you can't get your foot in there.
And that's one of the things.
You can't even get in there and make a
choice. I'm not sure I would have been hired for the 3-year term had they not already known me from the 1-year term.
Yeah.
The local collaboration thing is actually, we were the opposite of what you're saying. We have 4 people, and we looked for somebody who didn't do what the 4 of us were doing. Because we were already all doing nuclear.
That's a good point.
And the undergraduate research is that in fact is the most important thing. Then last jump, this what we can teach. I may be one of the only people in the room, but on the second year I was there, took over the senior lab course, redesigned it, and have been teaching it almost every single time. I want out really badly. But I have been teaching it forever, and I am all thumbs in the lab. I mean, I have been and always will be. I won't teach electronics. I just look for no way. I'm not going to touch it, and I don't want to, and they don't want to give it to me. But the other lab, the upper level lab, has been mine for 7 years now.
Can I ask a general question? Sorry. I was under the impression that every theorist at every institution can teach anything that has to do with physics, including electronics. Even string theorists can do that. And now I've heard for the first time that
they don't. If they have to, sure, but
it's not that you know electronics, but come on, I mean, it's engineering stuff. How hard can it be?
And there are arguments in the upper level labs. I'm not an experimentalist, but boy, I know who to find. When this experiment's not working, if I can't figure it out quickly, I know who to find. And it's good for the students to know that.
And this, so I think, was the argument yesterday. It was made explicitly by Don, I think, that we can teach anything if we put our minds to it. And so.
As somebody who was just hired by an institution that made it quite clear that they were going to a theorist only as a last resort, I can tell you what some of their concerns were, and they were less, could I teach the junior lab course, which I could, but I probably would, at least starting out, would not be as good at it as somebody who's really knows what they're doing. They were more concerned with labs. You know, was I afraid of an oscilloscope? You know, could I go into an undergraduate? You know, what were they going to have to worry about this in other places to try to shield me from it? And I tried to convince them that I could operate an oscilloscope. I would add, and also I would say that, you know, the for the experimentalist, the junior lab course, you know, they view that the way I view the quantum mechanics course. They're happy, you know, so there's, that could be a happy division. They're not trying to foist it up on me any more than they, you know, they would much rather, you know, we have different ideas of what's easy. But I would add to your list, and you mentioned not being able to get your foot in the door, and one thing that I think goes along with research was just the general fear that if they put me to teach electricity and magnetism on the first day, I would walk in and say, okay, consider a U1 gauge theory in four dimensions. that fear I found very substantial among people. I don't know if that's common to other people who have seen that.
I had to exercise my guilt because I think the story you started with was probably me, or at least I admit that's me. I've chaired probably six searches over the years, and every time my own predisposition is, let's hire a theorist this time, you know, somebody who's versatile. The versatility, I think, is our greatest strength. I wouldn't teach every course, solid state and the junior lab, I would not touch anything else in the department. So versatility, and I think honestly, that in my experience, theorists tend to be better teachers who thought more deeply about the fundamentals of the subject. And so that's a prejudice that I don't often say in public. for both those reasons, my own predisposition is to hire a theorist. In every case, we have had in our ad, experimentalist preferred, and I'll explain to you exactly the two reasons for this. First of all, the institution doesn't understand what a theoretical physicist is. For instance, even within the other science departments, the biology department, if you don't have an experiment going and the lights are flashing or something, they don't think you're
not really doing
and chemistry department, to some extent, also is a little bit that way. They don't understand what the phenomenon is, and we've tried to educate the institution, but several times the institutional, the committee that oversees all the searches has forced us to put in that requirement into the ads because they don't think a theoretical physicist is the real thing. The second thing is, this is much more serious, that within the department, we have struggled over the years to get competent, good teachers that are experimentalists, and we've got some good teachers that are experimentalists, but we had to have somebody who would reform our junior lab, and we hired, I should think over the years, a total of maybe five different people who were hired explicitly to make that junior lab, to bring that junior lab up to snuff. They come in, they work on it enthusiastically for about 3 months, they kind of lose interest, and we notice that they sort of converted themselves into a ersatz theorist after a year, and they're not really working on the labs anymore. So part of the consequence is that every time we go on a search, until we hired John Essek, by the way, some of you know him, that changed everything radically. Now we're much more flexible because John really did do it. The junior lab and all of our experimental program on its feet. So now we're covered as far as I go. But for many years, we simply had to try again to get the magic experimentalist who would put this program together. And so that was a top priority always, and we would make this same speech if people would call. Yeah, if we can't find the experimentalist, we'll make do with the theorist. Even though I was making that speech, really would have personally preferred the theorist in the first place. There were those two constraints.
I guess partly, if I can just butt in here for a second, I mean, I'm kind of bumping John Townsend out of his job here as a moderator. Let me just, if I could, just finish this up real quickly, which is, this is another question I thought of. I kind of wanted to get back to what David Griffith said a minute ago, but NAU is really not a liberal arts school in the traditional sense, and so I can't really judge an answer to this question. I mean, it's an undergraduate school, but it's 15,000 students, so it's not, you know, Mount Holyoke or something like that. But it seems to me, is this a selling point to schools like that? That my gut feeling is that, you know, the integrated average is that the theorists on average are a better fit to a liberal arts institution. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that. The other thing that seems to me like a little bit of a drawback to making this case is that if you're going to make it, probably you're going to have to make it to the administration rather than the department. The department knows what they want, and the there it seems to me that people are ultimately going to have the most control, at least at NAU, over who gets hired, not the administration. So I don't know if that's a legitimate point or not. And I guess I just want to make one other comment, which is, look, part of what I would hope here today, I mean, this is just my own desire, is that hopefully we could get to the point where we're not just kind of bemoaning the fact that people don't want to hire us in general, and is there anything concrete that can be done, or should anything be done, in the sense of trying to sway the views of people, and I think really it comes down largely to swaying the views of our fellow experimentalists, that they should be more open to considering theorists. I mean, I don't know the answer. I mean, should we, you know, have a mail campaign? I don't know. You know, telemarketing? I don't know. But I mean, should something be done? Because ultimately, that's what's going to have to happen if you want to change it.
I see a lot of hands up now. That one over there is an up first.
I wanted to comment on that statement. Two things. One is, it's kind of interesting because I don't think that anyone above our department really even understands that there's some distinction between experimentalists and theorists. Those in our department decide what we think would be best to put in the so that's interesting to hear. I mean, our president, I don't think we, our provost, our, you know, I would never even think about. But I do think that when I think about the university and its traditions, I mean, there's actually a big fight about science and literature. Like, there's always been this large schism sometimes that comes up about that. You know, should laboratory work be something that's done in the universities? But I think it's interesting to think that I believe with all my soul that a theorist does fit the spirit of a liberal arts institution more, because of what David just said about the thought that we're going to do. What is the academe is really, the institution is really, the life of mind is what we're trying to foster, ultimately. I mean, sure, the life of mind in physics comes out in trying to test our thoughts and ideas, you know, experimentally, but really, ultimately, it is about ideas and thoughts and questions, which I think theorists does tend to contribute. No experimentalists here, but I just think that in natural predisposition, we tend to really adhere to that life of mind more, and can then spread out broadly into the institution more easily.
Other comment? Yes. Don?
Other people had their hands up first. All right.
Yeah.
Three independent comments. First of all, it's completely different, our story at Illinois State than in Arizona. The last 6 out of 7 hires at Illinois State University were purposely theorists because they are cheaper. And we believe that experimental physics, to be to world-class experimental physics work, you need a lot of money. On average, there are, of course, wonderful exceptions, as we have heard here about. But in general, we theorists, we can still do world-class research work because we are just cheap. So therefore, it's much better for an undergraduate institution to hire a theorist if you're interested in good research work. The second comment is that we sell ourselves as computer experimentalists. That means we are already a little bit between the mathematicians with a pencil and a big eraser and those guys who fiddle around in the lab. That we, from an approach, are very similar as people who are doing computer experiments. We do computer simulations. Another is a kind of arrogant comment towards David, that of course I agree theorists are more intelligent and more versatile than experimentalists. But many theoreticians have this disadvantage that they hide behind mathematics too much and therefore are not so good explainers as a maybe not so sophisticated experimentalist who have a better way of explaining things more intuitively. But it's just them.
I have been in the five searches at Smith College, and almost all the time we wanted to have an experimentalist. And not that administration told us, because I don't think they really understand the difference between experimentalist and theorist, except for startup money. But always the argument we had was undergraduate research participation. That is why I think that if we, maybe some of people here could write convincing articles that could be published in Physics Today or somewhere with really statistical data, you know, how much research is being done by theorists with undergraduates, it would help tremendously. because we always, there was always the reason that we went into hiring an experimentalist, except for last hire. We just hired a theorist.
There's an unusual thing happening in the nuclear physics branch, which, as a part of the last long-range plan, one of the discussions that was taking place is nuclear physics is heading in this direction, and there are no theorists interested in this direction. So the experimentalists have realized that they need some people interested in doing the theory side, and they aren't there. And I don't know if it's arrogance on their part or what, but they don't want to, they can't force their institution, the major research institution, to hire theorists interested in this field. So they're thinking, is there a way that they can get undergraduate institutions to hire theorists interested in these things so that somebody starts studying this from a theoretical perspective? And apparently, in the last week, DOE has put together a task force to look at this issue of where are the theorists going to come from that study these questions that the funding agencies are pushing the experimentalists toward, and I, to some degree, the experimentalists have asked for that as well. But none of the theorists are going there right now, so how are they going to deal with that issue? Is there a way that there can be a task force just to look at it in general, not necessarily just for nuclear physics, but what role is there in the big scheme for theorists that aren't at major research institutions or aren't in places that have theory groups? And how do you get that going? How do you build the connections and collaboration so those people can survive when they're isolated at their own school instead of in a big research group?
Well,
gone.
I don't want to be long, but there's a little history I'd like to give about my own institution. I'm at a small school, we have a small department, it's only 3 tenure track lines, which is a whole other story. But when I was hired, there were 3 experimentalists, and they advertised experimentalists preferred, but they decided to interview me. I don't know the history of that. What I do know is that after I interviewed, it was down to me and an experimenter, and they were all convinced on the basis of the interview that I was clearly the better choice. You know, and so they went that way. And good for me, right, I had this job. And then it was a little while till we had another retirement. And at the time of that retirement, it was a little before I talked to my other colleague, who, you know, it was an assumption on his part that we hired another experimentalist. And we were, you know, promoting, also trying to get a 4th line. And my idea is that if we have a 4-person department, I think 2 experimentalists, 1 analytical theorist, and 1 computational physicist. And he said he would see a department with 1 theorist, computational, analytical, didn't matter, and 3 experimenters. And he wasn't trying to kick me out from computationalists, we're just, you know, visioning the department. The retirement came at the time of a hiring freeze, so we couldn't get the new tenure track line, and we got a temporary person. And in fact, there were 2 years of temporary people in the course of this process, and one of them was a theoretician. And for the temporary positions, there wasn't much concern. The issue was, how good a teacher? Well, this person we hired, Ted Allen, who is now at our department permanently, was fabulous. Not just fabulous as a teacher, but fabulous in creating a real community within the physics department and amongst the physics students, and providing something that we just hadn't had. And my experimental colleague saw this. I don't really know why he had preferred an experimenter before. It wasn't necessarily issues of undergraduate research, but I think it was some sort of conception that you could do some lab project with students, so he didn't do a whole lot of that. But then this person came in and he realized that there were a lot of things that the department needed. He wanted a teacher who didn't alienate the students. He wanted somebody to build community. I mean, he wanted all these many different things that made for a good department, and that you didn't know ahead of time what was the thing someone was going to bring. So a year later, when we finally got to do the real search, he was an advocate of saying, and it didn't need any pushing from me, to say the ad shouldn't specify the field. We should just make this open and see who we get. Let's get the person who's just gonna bring the most of the department. Maybe it'll be in undergraduate research, maybe it'll be in teaching, you know, but no one's gonna hit every category anyway. We had a short list of 3 people, an experimentalist and 2 theoreticians, as it turned out. One being this guy, Ted Allen, who had taught with us that year, that had converted my colleague. And he's the person whom we hired. And my experimental colleague and the experimental chemist on the search committee, they were probably his strongest advocates. I felt I was sort of in a conflicted position, so I wanted to hold back and see where they wanted to go. And it was, I think, you know, the hire has worked out very well. Now, in terms of local collaborations, that wasn't the issue. And in fact, Ted and I have not collaborated. I would love to collaborate, but our styles, what we're interested in, we talk a lot to each other about the things we're working on, but we don't collaborate. It'd be nice if we did, but as you say, you can't have a shotgun collaboration. And I think that sense that you don't need to specify ahead of time who you're going to hire is very liberating, because once the applications start coming in and you're not looking at it in this narrow view of, you know, we have this big fancy laser, let's get someone who's going to use it, things can happen. But it's, you know, that change in attitude was really traumatic to watch that happen. And I think it's, obviously we'd like to see our fellow theorists hired and have more theorists at places like this. But I think there's a broader case to be made, and I guess this is my, you know, hobby words of variety, that unless you have a clear reason that you need to hire a specific kind of physicist, you have an observatory and you need an astronomer, or, you know, but unless there's a clear reason, don't go putting blinders on. You know, you don't know. One year to the next, applications, that last search took 2 years, the applications we got each year were radically different in quality. There's these weird fluctuations. So I think that's one way to work with our experimental colleagues to open up the doors a bit wider. The last thing I'd like to address, question of the theorists, better adhere to the spirit of Lavar's institution. I've only got anecdotal evidence. My anecdotal evidence is that within my own department, these experimentalists who were there when I was hired were all multifaceted interests. One of them has co-authored a book with a professor of religious studies on metaphor. Another one has co-authored a book with four faculty from different departments on nuclear weapons and nuclear war and policy issues. So I think they mix in that sense. But there's this flip side that when people hear about something in the popular press about science, it's often about things that we can talk about. And I think I was probably the first physicist on campus who built, who was just sort of viewed as, oh, everyone can come talk about what was in the Tuesday New York Times section, you know, about, I don't know, whatever the latest thing was, whether it was cosmology or string theory, and it didn't matter. And so I think, I wouldn't say that we fit better the spirit of a liberal arts institution, but I think the kinds of physics questions that we get involved with are the kinds which tend to hold the popular imagination more. Mm-hmm. Not that I think they should hold the popular imagination more, not enough to make a value judgment here. I'm extremely uncomfortable with those kinds of comments. But as an empirical statement, I think that is something that we all have. Now I'll shut up.
I believe I agree a lot with what Dan has said, and I am more optimistic, I believe, than what I hear here. I believe that actually theories can be very attractive to undergraduate institutions for a bunch of reasons. I see all the limitations that are mentioned there, but some of them are actually advantages. One of them is that sometimes resources are more limited in undergraduate institutions, and institutions feel that they don't have enough money to support certain experimental research activities, or that the experimentalist will not be successful, perhaps, in attracting external funding to needs, and will not succeed. And institutions want faculty to succeed. They want to bring people that will like it and will like to stay. And there is a little bit of a perception that many of the experimentalists come because they wouldn't get a place in the national lab, and that's the reason why they're applying here. But if they could, they would leave, and they will leave as soon as they have a chance, as opposed to they are more willing to believe sometimes that the theorists actually might like to be, for certain reasons that they will explain in a second, to be in this sort of institution. And that's a very important point. I have seen that time and time again in the administration. I say, do you think that this person will like it and will stay here? That's a consideration, because the effort of bringing the person, getting startup funds, doing the search, etc., and in 2 years the person leaving, is a very it's a big burden for the institution. So they don't want that. So in that point, from that point of view, we have an advantage. The other one is that I feel that what some of you have been saying here is a very strong point. There are two reasons why people gravitate to physics, and I say to say it briefly. One is that you like, as a child with a screwdriver, to take apart things, and the other is that you like to know the great questions of the universe and the big philosophical questions. And in each of us, there is a little bit of both, I assume. But I would surmise that the proportion of people that gravitate to theory have a bigger component of the other one. And that fits better probably in the general pattern of a liberal arts institution. We are, I believe, I have seen it time and time and again, we can communicate better with the colleagues of the other side, so we are better spokespersons for the science and for the science needs of our departments or of our divisions, because we can collaborate. We can. In my institution, I am finishing at this point to write a book on Galileo, in which I have engaged people from three other departments that are not science, with a philosopher, a person from literature, a person in Judaic studies, that have common interests. Probably, I'm not sure if experimentalists in general, although there are exceptions all over the map, would be as successful. Our interests are vast. We pay a lot of attention to the fact that we can. For us, it's important in an institution that we can interact with people from very different walks of life. That is an added bonus. And experimentalists tend to live more inside their lab and go outside less. Having said that, there are all sorts of exceptions. We hired a wonderful organic chemist who's an experimenter, who's teaching things connected to chemistry and poetry, of all things, because that's his interest. So that happens. But on the other hand, theories are flexible. I would coincide with you. We were concerned in our last hire to get someone who could reform the junior lab because we were not happy with it. Finally, we ended up with a theorist for many reasons. And that person did a terrific job that I am not sure if an experimentalist could be successful in certain aspects. He, for example, decided that in certain experiments, besides actually putting the masses there and make them oscillate, he can do a little program with Mathematica where the student can model it at the same time. So they can do an experiment and model it and compare, which is a typical approach of a theorist, obviously doing that. Not doing just experiment, but modeling and compare the data. And that actually we liked. Actually, he brought very good ideas, so a theorist can actually, even in the areas where we think sometimes as liabilities, we are not as good to teach the labs, etc., but we can give something. Certain theories I am completely grounded, they get me always away from any experimental lab, but well, that's not a general rule. And I believe that we have a lot to offer to institutions, and institutions value that. It is true, his point, that the upper administration knows nothing and perhaps even the difference is lost in them. All they know is, well, you physicists, any one of you can teach any course, and chemists are not like that. The organic chemist refuses to teach physical chemistry. That much they know, that we are more versatile. That's perhaps their approach. So perhaps we have more leniency when it comes to decide what sort of person we want to hire. And I believe we should take advantage of that, because actually, in my institution, on the contrary, they would be very reluctant to hire an experimentalist. They will ask me very strong questions. Are you sure the person will get the funding? Will he get the lab going? Is he going to do the things he says? Is he going to leave after a couple of years? With the theorists, many of those questions will not come. I believe they came to appreciate that theorists can give a lot. I believe we have been good at selling ourselves.
Let me use my position as moderator here to insert a few remarks of my own. Because I have to say, I think, from my perspective, Gary's completely missed the mark. In the sense of being a person who has chaired, I mentioned yesterday, chaired my department for 14 years, been involved in many, many searches. The previous chair of the department was a theorist as well. There is a bias, but it's against theorists, not in favor of theorists, and I think I can explain why. I'm aghast by David's comment, sort of in the same way he was responding to the same comment yesterday about, boy, I'm amazed the administration would actually look, actually ask how many courses you're teaching. Isn't that some internal measure of the department? I'm aghast that there's some committee that looks down and says, we want you to hire experimentalists. Because when we hire, it is basically entirely determined by what we want within the department. The physicists just decide, we really want to hire X, we want to hire Y.
We don't have to run the ad by any.
Oh, I have to show the dean that the dean is more concerned with whether we're responding to affirmative action or something like that. Not concerned about whether we hire. I have to explain, no, we don't want to hire a theorist, you know. You know, I have to try to tell them why we don't want to do that sometimes. And not to say this carefully, because we have a theorist that we just hired way down there at the other end of the hall. And I try to explain all of this carefully. And then one other story, which is sort of interesting, that appeared in Physics Today many years ago, and it may be at one of your institutions. I thought it was a liberal arts college that had a non-trivial size, and sort of like an NFL football team going into the draft, they finally decided every year they would just go for the best athlete. And so in this case, it meant go for the best teacher. And after doing that for X number of years, they looked around and they had a department that was entirely filled with theorists. and they could make a case, well, that really wasn't responding to the needs of the students in a very fundamental way. And I suppose when we go to hire, we're looking first and foremost at what we see as the needs of the students. And we're looking to say, is adding a person in discipline X going to really sort of aid students in a fundamental way, that is, respond to their interests, respond to sort of preparing them for reasonable jobs, even though we like to think of ourselves as sort of working in a liberal arts discipline, there's still this idea that in the end, the students are wanting to leave and go out and get jobs. And there is no doubt that students who come out thinking they're going to be theorists have a tougher time finding jobs, getting into the best graduate schools, than whether they're trying to get jobs in undergraduate colleges and universities. There's just no doubt about it. That is a fundamental difference between theorists and experimentalists. And then secondly, I think one of the things that's hard to overestimate for us is that we have just seen over time, I've been privileged to have advised many of what I would have said were the outstanding students that we've had at Harvey Mudd Research over the years. But it's been pretty striking to me that over time, many of our best students, people I would say are the best students, that their interest has shifted in the things that are more applied. And whether it's because they're also looking at the job market for theorists, or whether in fact theoretical physics is just fundamentally not as engaging as it was when I was a kid, I'm not sure. I do think, for example, you know, it was with no accident that our ideal candidate for our search was a string theorist, because we wanted to hire somebody who was doing theoretical physics that we thought would be perceived as very sexy for students. And the real question was, would we be able to hire a person who could make string theory really work for undergraduates? That was really the question. And of course, we think we found the right person down there, or we wouldn't have hired him. But you know, over time, when I first joined the department, whether we had 11 or 12 faculty members, four of them were theorists. And gradually, under our leadership of theorists, that number declined to two. And now we've sort of gone up to three or four, depending on how you count our astronomer, who really is trained as a theoretical astrophysicist, but also advising students in observational astronomy. So to my mind, it's looking at what is really going to benefit the students in the long run and watching student interest that dictates this. And it isn't so much issues of collaborating or funding. None of those things, in my view, are really the important things. But that's just my perspective, and it clearly is different institutions. So,
okay, I'll add something, two things. One thing that you said, I don't think it's a characteristic that the character of physics has changed. What I think is true is what has been said yesterday, is that physics has gotten more competition. Like biology, biotech has gotten much more interesting for people who have a quantitative mind bent, who would, in the old days, have gone into mathematics or physics. And now we have other theoretical fields that we have to compete against. And so that is part of the story. The other thing is an earlier remark, that if you want to sort of count student involvement and write this letter or something to Physics Today, I think we can see here in this group that the theorists lose big time.
And the reason why I say this is if you look at Ina's list of collaborators and Catherine's list of collaborators, then you have this long list of students. And the reason why they have this long list of students is exactly the reason that Vina mentioned already. Namely, they are in between. They use data, or they simulate data. And so I would guess that experimentalists win hands down as far as student involvement, if you look at numbers, are involved. There is no way.
It's not only numbers that should be presented.
True, but for the administration or whatever, I think the numbers do matter. But I mean, I agree completely.
I just want to mention that when I was hired, they definitely were looking for a theorist, and they told me in no uncertain terms that I was being hired to teach. And I think I was also being hired because I was fairly young at the time, and they knew they could pay me virtually the lowest salary available. I think that's probably why I was hired. I wasn't their first choice. But I was their second choice. I was quite happy to get hired at the time. You know, $35K seemed like a lot of money to me at the time as well, so I was happy. Since then, I've been there for 12 years. Every single, we've had three different people being hired since then, and two of them were experimentalists, and one of them was a teacher kind of physics ed kind of person. And I think that's the kind of people that they're looking for. They really want experimentalists, and they want physics ed people, like Cal State Fullerton.
Okay. Yes, I largely agree with the moderator, John. And this may be a reflection of our institutional circumstances. I was hired about 20 years ago, and last year's. That might tell you what they think of me. Actually, as far as I can tell, they're really happy with me, and I couldn't have asked for a better treatment. The truth is, I've also sat through a number of hires, seven or eight, and in each case, I have agreed with others and maybe even argued more strongly for an experimentalist than a theorist. I agree that theorists, on the average, are better teachers. I think they're better fit to a liberal arts environment. And the versatility, I think, is there. There's no question about it. And by the way, my department, we theorists, and I, we teach labs. I even teach solid-state physics. I've taught a course on semiconductor devices, MOSFETs, and so on and so forth. And by the way, it's not that easy.
I have done it. Still, I learned it. I didn't know any of this, and I didn't care. But I have done it, and I've done it good.
Still, I agree with John's remarks that all things considered, experimentalists are a better fit, market-wise, to the kind of quality and temperament of the students that we're getting. And let me say something about my department. About 90% of our resources go to service, not to our majors. And that includes the engineering students, the education, the teacher training, and all those other things. And so, by the way, my department hadn't hired a theorist for 10 years prior to me. So that was quite. Now, it's true, and maybe, again, maybe with the expanding horizons of computational possibilities, which to me is a bit of a laboratory. Maybe our neurotheorists are to some extent numerical experimenters. Maybe there's a little bit of an outlet there as far as the job market is concerned, as far as the field is concerned, and so on. But again, all things considered, it's an unfortunate fact that as far as at least my departmental circumstances are concerned, by and large, experiment is a benefit. And whatever, let me quantify it. I mean that to the tune of something around 60 or 70%. So out of each 10 people, I think perhaps you want something like 3.
Can you explain better fit for the needs of the students mean, or in what sense do you say that?
Yes,
somebody said students tend to gravitate more to laboratory-based work. I agree with that. That tends to be the case, both in terms of their possibilities and in terms of what they perceive in terms of job opportunities, the future, those who have gone before them. They also have a perception that it is difficult for a theoretical physicist to get a job, just flat out, anywhere, which is true, in fact, compared to our experimentalist colleagues. Now, they somehow associate that with working with them as well. So that tends to make them go preferentially to experimenters. Now, I've had plenty of students myself. I'm really not speaking of my own individual experience. I'm speaking of the overall situation. And even though I would love to have theorists around me, I bitterly miss having the right ambiance around me. When it comes to decision time, my conscience takes the better of me, and I agree with my experimentalist friends that's a better fit to me.
Yeah, a quick question. I would like to know what is your opinion. My experience is a little bit of the opposite. The students gravitate towards the most theoretical possible. So each time a student wants to speak to me, he wants to discuss with me string theories. Perhaps if I would follow what I think is a better fit to the needs, curiosities of the students, I would be hiring string theories. So perhaps you want to talk to me. it's not experimental. So it might be changing from place to place according to the population you are in connection to. Our students, actually, it's very difficult to convince them that they have to take a lab course, that they have to do a junior lab. It's the course we have to fight more to push the students into. They gravitate, and their curiosity would be the most theoretical possible question.
Yeah. I might respond that I see our students getting really excited, even weaker students get really excited about the most fundamental areas of physics. And in fact, of the students who have worked with me, in the past, probably some fraction, half, decided, boy, if that's what theoretical physics is like, I think I'm going to go on and be an experimentalist. Maybe that was my abilities as an advisor. Maybe it was their take on their own abilities. But I thought, boy, what an important thing to learn while you're an undergraduate instead of investing 3 or 4 years in graduate school. And so there's a lot to be said for that. But again, I see that maybe our students have, maybe they're well-informed, maybe they have a more applied bent. But it seems to me there's been somewhat of a sea change with the most able students. I'm always a little reluctant to say, boy, if a student isn't really good, what are we doing leading that student into theoretical physics? Because you've got to be really, really good to thrive in theoretical physics. And if this is really a career choice, which it may very well be the beginning of, then you'd like people to be making wise decisions. And so you know, to seduce people into, say, string theory, if they don't have a chance of really succeeding, I think is not serving their purposes very well. But fortunately, I think most of our students seem to be sort of catching on to this.
I guess I just reacted to something that I see from a lot of these comments, this idea that, you know, after their first year in college, they were supposed to get them into research, and you're saying, you know, this research is a step on their career, and if they do experimental atomic physics after their freshman year, that's what they're going to do in grad school. And I'm a little nervous that, especially in this, you know, in the institutions that we represent, that seems like really an antithesis of what we should be promoting. That you know, I think I agree, somebody made a comment that people get more applied, and to me that says that's the great time as an undergraduate to do theory, to get sort of a broader perspective, and then you can bring those tools to an experimental lab that's more applied in graduate school is the time to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of experience watching our students get into graduate school, and others may disagree with this, but it seems to me that in many cases, the graduate schools do a take on what area they think the person is going to go into by looking at what they've done their undergraduate research in. And so, in fact, when we warn our students that if doing research with me or with another theorist in the department may, in fact, and is very likely to make it harder for them to get into the best graduate schools. Those, you know, at the very top group, I think there is just no doubt about that.
I've had the opposite reaction. I mean, if you look at an astronomy graduate school in the country, the top astronomy graduate schools, I would bet that it's in single digits the number of astronomy majors they take. You know, they only take physics majors. I had a friend in college who was a math major.
Right. No, I'm talking about theoretical physicists.
No, but I'm saying that astronomers, that astronomy graduate schools, as an example, don't want people who have specific background in astronomy, in observation work that they want. A background in general.
I don't see the connection between that, which I can readily believe. That's why we don't have an astronomy major at my institution. Right. We just have physics majors, although we don't have a strong astronomy program. But I have trouble seeing the connection of that between people going on in theoretical physics.
No, I'm saying that you could, that starting as an undergraduate doing theory does not seem to me to be hindering your ability to do an experiment later on. It might be part of the natural way of doing it.
I mean, one of our students right now, who's a new assistant professor at the University of Virginia, and who made the mistake of both doing theoretical and experimental work as an undergraduate, in the end, did not get admitted to one of the very best graduate schools where he thought he wanted to go because they had done a take, and because he had done work with a general relativist, he was going to be a general relativist. And now he is one of the absolute leaders in experimental AMO physics that holds the record for the maximum number of particles that have actually been entangled experimentally. I mean, in that case, Harvard made a very, very poor choice, but in fact, they were judging it just on what this guy was likely to do. And in some of these institutions, the research groups are literally picking the students, which I think is a very misguided thing. So, yes, Don? Or Ralph has had it longer, I'm sorry. They're vying back there.
I think that's an interesting point that I've never heard before. The graduate schools look at what actually the students have done rather than have they done anything. But the question that I was actually going to ask was, is it really true that theorists don't get jobs? It may well be that they don't get jobs as string theorists or as particle physicists or something. But let me tell you, everyone string theorists that I have known who had to leave the field because he or she didn't get a job, they make a lot more money than I do. And some of them have retired already. And so the idea of being theoretical, the selling point was not so much that, and that goes along those lines, is that they stick exactly with what they've learned. But what they do is they learn methods, and they learn quantitative methods. And this sort of mind frame you can apply anywhere. And so none of these people is starving, and they're doing financially much better than I do.
And Don?
I guess I think that's an excellent point regarding the employability of theorists. And I think there's a trap that we can sink into when we're no, I was addressing this. I don't think our institutions are in the business of vocational education. Frankly, whether you're a research university or a private liberal arts college or anywhere in between, students are coming through, and they're coming out, and in that process, they've matured intellectually. They've experienced all sorts of things in the classroom and research and whatnot. A student of mine who did analytical work in quantum mechanics went to grad school in Columbia and applied physics, later went on and became a doctor. I know that grad schools do look and try to make these guesses, but I don't think that's determinative. It sounds like a student may not have gotten into Harvard, but probably got somewhere good. And I think that we run into a problem if you start getting them on a track where we think this is all about where your career goes. I don't even think the physics major is specifically about going to physics graduate school. I think the physics major is about opening up your mind. I tell students, college is about twisting your brain around in strange ways. And so, in that sense, I think no one is harmed by working with a theorist, because the future is some strange thing out there. You don't know what it's going to be.
Can you come and find working with
it? I don't think you're harmed. Let's drop something out there. Whatever you said, just said, Don, the hands went up like that.
Another comment that I think also there's a historical thing, which is I think, you know, theorists at liberal institutions, we were curiosities when I was hired. We're not curiosities here, and I wonder if some of these prejudices are really just habits. And with meetings like this and communications and networking and people getting aware of things, whether those habits might just change through some kind of
I just want to respond to John and Rob saying what John. It's absolutely true that, you know, if you're a string theorist, you're not liable to starve thereafter. But that's also because to be a string theorist in the first place, you are very talented and very hardworking, very persevering. And that's going to pay off no matter what. We're not talking about the people who can do that, but the average student, I would love to have more and more students working with me, or with string theorists for that matter, but, you know, when I went to San Francisco State looking for a job, just like when my wife was in the Bay Area, Little more hires anyone who has touched a laser, basically, because you've got so many lasers that need to be handled, and that sort of immediate employability is so much more prevalent with experimental training. I mean, the latter strangest things that have nothing to do with any theorist would perhaps do it, but you sort of super selected or, you know, overqualified, whatever. You come out of the line, unless you can translate only if you are either an elite trained, so you can move over into management consulting or whatever, or you're computationally adept, and you can translate that over. I mean, for the best, there's no question, you can do whatever you want. It's for the middle rank, which is what most colleges are looking at. They feel that unless you got your hand on a laser or, you know, a solid state device, you're not going to get a job that knowing the Fokker-Planck equation isn't necessarily very useful for humanity, you know, whereas that device might be. I mean, people might completely disagree on what training does in terms of future employability, but internships and labs, that's the reason why people get internships in industry. Just getting the hand is dirty gets them a job.
And Dan? I want to comment upon what Don said about the culture. And this is really into the remark about the fear that if they hire a theorist, they're walking into physics forum and say, we will consider this U1 theory on in four-dimensional space-time. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the quality of the talks to theorists. when I was applying for jobs, I went to North Carolina State and I gave a talk about phase transitions and face of a cubic ionizing antiferromagnet, and the chair came up to me afterwards and said, "That was just great. That is the first time I have ever listened to a talk by a theorist and understood what it was about." I didn't get the job. Maybe he figured that if I could say things that people understood, I shouldn't get the job. But I do think that part of the problems we build for ourselves, you never see an experimentalist coming in and giving a talk and say, "Oh my God, you know, this is how we repaired the vacuum system." Whereas it's becoming less and less common. But I have certainly sat through talks, you know, with tens, absolutely opaque equations on ViewGraph after ViewGraph after ViewGraph. I think we're doing much better about that, and I have to compliment all the people who have given talks last afternoon. They were not transparent, but they would see what was going on, and they none of these were the talk of the sort where you could just fall asleep after the first 5 seconds. So I think that part of I do think that theorists for a long time have given a lot worse talks than experimentalists, and I think we're improving. And if we keep on improving, we might get out of this self-built hole that we're going to do nothing but talk about group theory in elementary physics.
John?
I'd like to go back to a remark that Helen was saying made, that 90% of our teaching involvement is service courses. So we haven't really we've been talking a lot about involving our undergraduate majors in research, but this certainly must be relevant to the retention issue. If a theorist is hired against the desires of the hiring department, who wanted somebody to do Mossbauer effect, how is this theorist going to acquire tenure? And one of the things the theorist is going to have to do is, it seems to me, teach at least three different groups of people. One group are the physics majors, some of whom are ourselves in early training, and others will get their bachelor's degree and then do other things. Another group are the service courses for people who are a captive audience. In my school, 300 every semester have to take Physics 1 and the next semester Physics 2 because they want to apply to Johns Hopkins. And then there's the group of the real liberal arts students. When I came on board 3 decades ago, I was given the task of teaching the beginning astronomy class, which had been taught by a colleague who was an experimenter and astronomy was a peripheral interest. And they felt that because I'm involved in general relativity, I should be able to teach astronomy. Well, I had only recently before learned what a kiloparsec is. So I started looking at the literature that's out there, the textbooks. And what I discovered is practically all of the good textbooks in astronomy for poets and historians are written by observational astronomers. And I think it's because these folks are not ashamed to simplify and use analogies to give an intelligent person the gist of an idea without a thorough quantitative understanding. And so I found out that I'm going to steal something from Don's earlier remarks before the first Bravo episode. He's talking about building community. I think we can do that not just as theorists learning from experimenters' books, but as theorists and experimenters in our own departments. See, we have things of value that we can teach each other. We can discuss ideas. We can say, I was teaching this course and I didn't have a really good way of selling this idea to the non-expert. Do you have an idea? And over time, that's been a rich source for me, and I hope I've contributed back to my colleagues in the same way. So I'm not sure whether theorists adhere better to the spirit of liberal arts education. I think in terms of our own intellectual quest, perhaps yes, but to really be successful in our teaching mission, especially in these service courses, for the people who will take one course in astronomy or liberal arts physics or whatever it is, and then go out and become the educated populace who is making decisions through their votes about the support of scientific research in our society. I think this is also an important area in which we can contribute if we're aware of it.
I think we've reached the witching hour here. We're already gone over our scheduled time by 5 minutes. And so I think in order to, even though we have to walk a few miles to get lunch, maybe it's appropriate to stop for now. And we're resuming at 2 p.m.
Yeah, thank you.